across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for Monday, June 12th, National Peanut Butter Cookie Day. Aaron Dahmers, where do you stand on the compelling subject of peanut butter cookies?
I love them, especially if they're homemade and they have the little Hershey's Kiss in the middle.
Hershey's Kiss, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That, I mean, that's a Christmas staple, it seems. I don't know how it got to be that way, but it is. Peanut butter cookies are one of those things I almost never eat. And in part, it's because once I start, that's the Lay's potato chips. Nobody can eat just one peanut butter cookie, right?
Definitely not. Especially if, like you said, with the Christmas staple, usually I make them pretty small. Mm-hmm. So that they're little, they have the little Hershey's Kiss in the middle, or they're bigger and they have the fork crosshatch. Either way.
Yes. And well, yeah. And if you make them little, then it's okay to have more than one, right?
Exactly.
All right. Coming up this hour, signs of hope, but also a bitter pill. Wisconsin Democrats gathered for their annual convention. Legislators who were there celebrated recent success in statewide elections. They expressed optimism about 2024, but they also groaned over the prospect of supporting a compromise bill with Republicans that provides much more funding for local governments and public schools, but also makes the voucher school program even stronger. We will talk to State Senator Kel DeRoys, a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, about that topic and more from the convention. If you missed it in our last hour, our convention talk and more about our most widely read stories with Sherita Booker and our visit with Kristen Lyerly, who may pop in again yet this hour. But if you missed last hour, it's already a podcast. We take every hour of our shows here on Civic Media radio stations. They get automatically turned into a podcast episode shortly after that hour ends. And you can subscribe to our show as a podcast. You can do it through the Civic Media website, which is civicmedia.us, or go to Apple or Spotify or any of the usual places that have podcasts, and you'll find us there. Subscribe, take us along. It's the way that I catch up with a couple of the other shows that air when I can't listen to them live while I'm doing some of the other work for Up North News. So just be aware that we are wherever you want us to be for your listening enjoyment. 844-967-2789 is the studio line number if you'd like to join us, perhaps to share your thoughts on former President Donald Trump being indicted for documents that, I mean, to put it mildly, he took improperly, handled sloppily, spoke about recklessly, and then tried to hide them from law enforcement upon their return, which you and I know as obstruction of justice. That's what Donald Trump is facing. And by the way, for folks saying, well, what about Biden and what about Trump and what about Hillary? Keep this in mind, as noted in the New York Times. The indictment last week does not charge Trump with the illegal retention of the 197 documents that he returned to the archives. Remember, they said, hey, you have all these documents, you need to return them. He returned 197 of them and said, that's all I got. And so he's not being charged with any of the ones he returned. He's being charged in connection with the ones that he lied about and kept and moved to another location, probably next to a toilet in the bathroom, if you saw the pictures over the weekend of the boxes stacked up in one of the Mar-a-Lago bathrooms. Had Trump simply returned all the classified documents that he'd taken with him, he probably would not have been charged with any crime, same as the others. But of course, folks on the right wing are having a freak out and engaged in an amazing display of whataboutism. In fact, I don't even think I can finish reading this tweet from the account Wisconsin Right Now before we have to go to break. And if that's the case, we might just go to break in mid-sentence, because you just have to hear, the rationalization going on with this Trump indictment. They write, let's say you get caught rolling through a stop sign, but you're the opponent running against the mayor, and the mayor told the entire police force to sit on every corner near your house for the last 7 years, just looking for you to roll through the stop sign or speed or drive drunk or whatever, just you. Your neighbor speeds, rolls through stop signs, and drives drunk, but supports the mayor, so the mayor tells the police not to look for his car. Maybe your neighbor has a red car. Police are told not to worry about red cars. They're supposed to sit there for 7 years waiting for you, only you. Let's say the same police force previously leaked to all the media in town that you're a drunk driver, which resulted in a lot of stories convincing people that you are, but when they finally stopped you, you blew 0.0. It's discovered they trashed you in text messages, so they had cried wolf before. They also simultaneously prosecute you for rolling through a stop sign 7 years ago, even though it's beyond the statute of limitations, and they can't prove you actually rolled through the stop sign. They get your attorney to tell them you told him you rolled through the stop sign 7 years ago by digging through his business affairs and threatening to prosecute him. So that's going on at the same time. 7 years later, they finally get you through rolling through the stop sign. Then the media, the mayor, your critics, everyone crows endlessly about how reckless you were, how you violated a statute and should face 500 years in prison because nobody is above the law. Oh, God. And stop. On and on and on it goes. On it goes. The rationalization that somehow Donald Trump is a victim, as opposed to Donald Trump took nuclear secrets. Donald Trump took papers related to America's military response and probably things more sensitive that we're going to learn about, essentially about spies and others, some of whom have died since. And again, go with the other foot analogy. If this shoe were on the other foot, if these stacks of boxes about these things were in Hillary Clinton's bathroom, if you say that she shouldn't be prosecuted either because of whatever analogy that was just now by Wisconsin Right Now, let's take a break. We'll talk more about this and other headlines in the news after this. You're up north. Temperatures around Wisconsin right now include 49 degrees up in Woodruff, 49 in Onalaska, 49 in Madison, 49 here in Lake Wasota. Things seem a little consistent across the state, shall we say. But now it's time to get the forecast for the entire week here across the state of Wisconsin. And meteorologist Michael Cairo from Weatherology joins us to give us all the details. Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you. And yeah, cooler than average start here, especially today and into your Tuesday. But we do get back to some more summer-like temperatures Wednesday and thereafter. And along with those cooler temperatures, as an upper-level low-pressure system lingers across the Great Lakes, we'll have some on and off shower chances. Today, pretty scattered in nature, especially by this afternoon. We could even have some rumbles of thunder by late in the day as well. High temperatures looking to stay confined to the lower 70s from Wausau down to near Madison. And likewise, over into the Fox River Valley region, I think we'll be closer to the middle to upper 70s in far western portions of the state, where we'll hold on to that sunshine the longest for today. And then as we head into the night tonight, rain looking pretty widespread to statewide, and again, could have some rumbles of thunder yet early on this evening. Overnight low temperatures looking to drop back into the lower part of the 50s. Into the day on Tuesday, keep the rain gear handy, especially from Eau Claire and points eastward, the best chance for those lingering showers and some thunder showers. We can maybe see a few peaks of sunshine for areas like Baldwin over to near Amory, which will help us get at least into the lower range of the 80s for highs, but where we'll be stuck under the clouds and rain, only expecting the middle to upper 60s for high temperatures as far south as Madison, and looking at mid-60s likewise for Wausau down to near Oshkosh. Finally, that system exits on off to the east into the day on Wednesday, giving us a dry forecast pretty much statewide, and temperatures starting to improve on your Wednesday as well. We're back all the way into the upper range of the 80s over to near La Crosse as well as Eau Claire, and expecting lower 80s for Madison up to near Wausau, right around that 80-degree mark for Oshkosh. Still looking to stay dry statewide even into the day on Thursday, well into the 80s for western Wisconsin, closer to the upper range of the 70s for eastern portions of the state. And then finally, by the time we get to Friday, our next area of low pressure does bring a chance for some hit or miss type showers and storms, mainly into the afternoon time frame on Friday.
We appreciate all those details, Michael. Thanks so much. Have a great day. From Weatherology, that's meteorologist Michael Cairo. In sports, the Oakland A's swept the Milwaukee Brewers over the weekend. Again, the lowly Oakland A's swept the Brewers. Didn't we refer to them as the lowly Arizona Diamondbacks when the Brewers were swept by them earlier in the series? It just seems to be a thing. 8-6 was yesterday's score. Christian Yelich did homer for the Brewers. Milwaukee drops into second place in the National League Central. They're off today and up in downtown Minneapolis to take on the Twins Tuesday night and Wednesday afternoon. Kristen Lierley and Aaron Zommers with us again as we kind of come back to the Trump indictment, simply because it was such a, it's unique, it's historic, and the reaction to it is especially troubling to me. The notion that this is somehow, the New York Times called it in one of their headlines, they said Trump case puts the justice system on trial in a test of public credibility. Pardon me for yelling for a minute. No, it does not. It does not put the justice system on trial. It is Donald Trump who is on trial. And this continued both sidesing of things is just not good for the American justice system overall. I'm looking at a CBS poll, CBS News poll, that talks about that among GOP primary voters, among Republican primary voters, 60% said this won't change their opinion of Trump, and 14% said it will change their view of Trump for the better. Only 7% said this would change their view of Trump for the worse. So again, 75% said it won't change or change for the better. But Kristen, Aaron, I think the thing that's missing here is that, that's 75% of a smaller number. I don't think Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form is growing the total number of people, Aaron, who would be his diehard supporters.
I don't think so either. I think that his supporters simply are his supporters, that they have subscribed to this alternate reality of QAnon and everything, and that if Donald Trump is in prison after this, they will write him in on the ballot. If Donald Trump is dead, they'll write him in on the ballot. If we were to find video evidence that he had committed every mass shooting in American history, they'd write him in on the ballot.
Sadly so. I mean, look, you've got 76% of primary voters saying the indictment was politically motivated. And does this, if Trump kept nuclear military documents, would it put national security at risk? 80% of the country says yes, but less than 40%, Kristen, of GOP primary voters.
Were you watching Fox News at all after the indictment hit? Because I was. I was flipping back and forth. I was going from MSNBC.
Hunter Biden, Hillary. That's pretty much what Fox News was.
It was a classic pivot. They didn't actually talk about the true issues at hand, and all they did was editorialize in the way that they do about how this really goes back to Hunter Biden. Why are we not investigating Hillary? This is a double standard. I mean, it was really, I couldn't believe what I was watching, but it does explain why his followers love him so much, because that's their only source of news, and that's what they're being spoon-fed. So that's what they believe.
Well, and because he's been such a figure for them, Aaron, another question in the poll says, if it's not Trump, do you want the nominee to be similar to Trump or different from Trump? Again, about 75% say they want the nominee to be similar to Trump. Only 26% say they want the nominee to be different from Trump. So Trumpism, to your point about Trump, when he dies, Trumpism will still be a part of this Republican Party. It's not like he goes to jail and suddenly a hypnotic spell is broken.
Yeah, unfortunately, as we've seen with other people trying to do either a diet Trump campaign or try to be worse from our perspective than Trump, like Ron DeSantis and everybody, he has changed politics and not for the better.
I liked that diet Trump. This is like a soda thing. You could be like Coke, like Trump Zero, or, there could be all of these different slight variations that aren't exactly like Trump, because that's what the GOP presidential primary field is really looking like right now.
Yeah, definitely.
And right now, when you ask, again, Republican primary voters, do you want a Republican president to find common ground with Democrats? the ones who call themselves non-MAGA Republicans, 80% of them want a Republican president to find common ground with Democrats. But of Trump's biggest supporters, MAGA Republicans, 56% want to find common ground with Democrats. Still a majority, somewhat surprising to me, but far below what non-MAGA Republicans want to see. And in fact, of the MAGA Republicans, 35% want the next Republican president to investigate and punish Democrats versus only 10% of non-MAGA Republicans. And Kristen, you and I have those conversations when we're knocking on doors. They're out there. The real question is, how many of each of those groups of Republicans actually turn out to vote on any given election day?
That's always the question. You know, people have opinions, of course, but how many people are really putting their opinions into action? And I think that's also an issue with these polls, because you can see as you're looking at the poll numbers that they might agree with one question but disagree with another because they're not linked together and there's not that logical pattern that they have to follow. So polling data only gets us so far. This is so much more complicated than a single question.
Aaron?
I mean, yeah, it definitely is much more complicated than a single question.
Well, look, I should say that I'm one of the people that will mention that polling is only a snapshot in time and not to put too much stock into it. But I bring up this particular one to show the partisan split upon news of an indictment. And I think Aaron's point is very well taken, that even if there's a conviction on this, their views are not likely to change. And I don't like being the wet blanket in all of this, but I've said it once before, I'll say it again. A conviction is by no means assured. All it takes is one person on that jury. Much like it would have only taken a couple of Republican senators to save Trump from impeachment, from conviction. Well, in fact, it was almost every Republican senator who saved him. So if you've got even one on a jury, and that's why I just want people to temper their expectations, not only about convicting him, but what this does to America. I think, Kristen, that the healing of America to again believe in law enforcement. You can't just say, I back the blue, but then you don't back the FBI where they're investigating. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to take a little time to heal. I think any one conviction alone isn't going to do it.
Well, and there are so many other charges. Let's not forget that we've got Georgia out there. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, I mean, there are two more cases waiting in the wings. So this is not an isolated incident. This is obviously a pattern. And when you talk to people on the street, even people who are MAGA people, you find that we share so many similar values. We just get distracted by the gold lame and the crazy words that Trump uses because he's enthralling, he's interesting, he's entertaining, but it is distracting us from the things that we actually care about and the things that are meaningful in our lives. We've got to get back to that. And I really think we're on the path to making that happen, but it's going to take a lot of effort from all of us to make it happen.
It reminds me that we haven't discussed lately celebrity politics and the difference between the types. There are people who, when we talk about all of Trump's big fans out there, invariably they come back to Barack Obama and say, well, he was a celebrity. He was, you know, you guys went crazy over him. Yeah, he was a politician at the time who won people over with his devotion to public service, as opposed to somebody who'd already been a celebrity on TV and in the movies and for, you know, a business career riddled with failure, but he was willing to be boisterous. That's, you know, that's your Jesse Ventura kind of celebrity politics. And that didn't work out great for Minnesota. It didn't work out great for the country, as opposed to, yeah, somebody who gets famous for actually, you know, wanting to serve, wanting to help others. We just need to be mindful of what kind of celebrity politics do we want in this country?
I feel like that's a necessary component, though, for many politicians at this point, because of what gets us interested in going out to vote and in choosing our leaders. We don't choose somebody who doesn't have that charisma, that flair. We choose people who we feel like, wow, that person could really, really pop. So, you know, it's hard to have both the talent to campaign and the talent to lead. Those are really unique people.
Mm-hmm. That in fact they are. And that's why when we are at places like the, you know, state Democratic convention, when you see people willing to put themselves out there, you know, we had state representative Melissa Ratcliffe on Friday, Kristen, mm-hmm. and then you and I talked to her at the convention and you could see again, somebody who prior to 2016 would never never saw herself getting involved. But then once she got involved, you totally understand why. She got involved at the local level and then eventually as a legislator. And when people like that pop, you don't want to make them celebrities necessarily, but you definitely want to talk them up.
You bet. And all of them have a story where they found something they cared about and they followed that path. And now they are our state leaders who are making a difference. Jody Emerson's another example.
And here comes another one, State Senator Kelda Royce, who's going to join us in just a couple of minutes here. Kristen, happy camper. Enjoy the campground there. We'll see you Thursday for Hometown Health.
I can't wait.
All right. Have a great day. And when we come back, again, Senator Royce, a member of the Joint Finance Committee, a bit about the convention and a bit about this agreement worked out between Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans. Something for everybody to love, something for everybody to hate. What does that mean? We'll ask her coming up next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Still to come, Terry Bell, News Director of Civic Media, but I'm joined now by State Senator Kelda Royce of Madison, sorry, at the State Democratic Convention, a rare appearance outside of the committee room where she serves on the Joint Finance Committee and has been locked down for months trying to bang out a state budget. Kelda, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How are you? How are you doing after a convention and a busy budget season so far?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. It's I think we see the end in sight, but we'll have to see, because the Republicans, they fight with each other so much that oftentimes when we think we're going to be handling an agency, they put it off because they haven't come to agreement amongst themselves.
That's true. And for folks who aren't familiar with the state budget process, the Joint Finance Committee basically kind of goes through it like department by department, agency by agency to look at the budget. Although it appears to me, looking at the schedule, that tomorrow when you're basically reviewing the full scope of the agreement that Governor Evers reached with legislative Republicans, both on shared revenue and school funding?
That is what is scheduled, and we'll see. I mean, we have yet to see the details for this very complicated and significant plan. So I'm looking forward to seeing the details.
Well, then that will make it interesting if the details are still being put to paper. Look, I had said early on, you know, my prediction was that if and when a deal is reached, one of the things that progressives were going to have to accept, like it or not, is that in return for more funding for schools and local governments, it was going to mean a big boost for either voucher schools or some other big Republican priority. Well, it turns out to be voucher schools are going to be big winners out of this, but so are mm-hmm. public schools and local governments. Is this, I don't know if you're ready to commit to support to something that you don't have all the details for, but is it at least in line with kind of what your expectations for an agreement would be to get through a mixed state government the way that we have?
Well, I mean, I think that the challenge is we have a massive surplus, an historic surplus. And so the fact that our public schools has still not recovered from the devastating cuts of the Walker era and are still behind the eight ball, I think it's a tough pill for folks like me who are huge public school advocates to swallow. The Republicans had signaled early on that this was a big priority for them. This is obviously a pet project of Robin Voss, school privatization. But they also had said that they were going to do a significant increase to public schools. And I think, like shared revenue, it's something that all legislators from every area of the state has been hearing about, that our public schools and our local governments have been starved of money. So I think the Republicans really knew that they had to do something significant. And but I think the devil is going to be in the details. It's a trust but verify situation with the Republicans, because they're so good at manipulating the media and getting a good headline and then not following through. And well, so I really do want to see the details of the plan.
Well, that's something that the congressman from your area, Mark Bocan, told us about on the show last week, that one of the reasons he was a no vote on the debt ceiling deal was that some of it relied on a handshake agreement, and that he wanted to see everything, you know, on paper before he was willing to commit to that. That's probably a little easier to do at the federal level than the state level. And that's not a measure of trust. I just mean the way that Congress operates versus the legislature is you would expect to see as close to 100% of the deal as possible already put to ink and paper, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, the way that the Republicans on finance have been operating is they don't even tell us what they're proposing until the minute that they vote for it. So we have to ask for, you know, 20 minutes to get a briefing from the Fiscal Bureau to even know what they're proposing and what they funded, what they've not. And they also package all every single item for one agency together. So you're basically getting one vote per agency. And we used to, you know, the state used to actually debate item by item, or you might group things together, but you would at least have a whole day to spend on an agency. Now the Republicans don't give us that much time or that much courtesy.
It really is. If folks don't gloss over what Senator Roy's just told you, I can tell you from personal experience that the way a state budget was done was the way that you would do it, you know, at home. You would go through things line by line, item by item. It might take a while, but what you wouldn't do is lump a whole bunch of bills together, slide it across the table to your spouse and say, here it is, take it or leave it. That's not how this is supposed to work, but that is how Republicans have run the place since they've realized they can ram pretty much anything through. And it's not that it's there's nothing better or more efficient about it. It's simply, you know, a combination of arrogance and hubris, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, this is what unchecked power does. And I, you know, Congressman Pocan is one of the smartest and savviest politicians in the country. And, you know, when he was in charge of the Joint Finance Committee, they had a very different process that was much more open. And, you know, if he says, like, you need to verify what Republicans say, that's a pretty good indicator that that they don't have a history of necessarily delivering on what they promise at the press conference.
Let's at least for the moment assume or guess that this does come through joint finance with minimal changes, just for the sake of agreement. Does that tell us that it's June 12th now and a budget is technically due by June 30th, although there's no government shutdown per se, but still it's due by then. Do you feel like you're currently on a glide path to finish this on time, or is it still too soon to tell?
I wouldn't say it's a glide path. It's more of a, you know, white knuckle emergency landing, in part because the Republicans have had so much conflict between the Senate and the Assembly caucuses, and then within each caucus, that they have put off many, many big agencies until the very end. So now we've got maybe 2 weeks to consider all the, basically the bulk of the state budget. And that's going to be very challenging, especially since they haven't been able to be on the same page. So yes, it's still possible, but it's going to be a very tough couple of weeks, especially because the Republicans just don't seem to be able to get together with each other.
You live in Madison in Dane County, one of the two most vilified places by Wisconsin Republicans, the other being Milwaukee, the city and county. A lot of focus has been on the revenue sharing agreement and what happens to the state's largest city, you know, the biggest cog in the economic engine. Whatever comes out of this, what do we tell the rest of Wisconsin about the way that this current legislature treats two of its biggest assets?
Well, it's really disappointing to see, you know, once again, this Republican strategy of pitting people against each other, sowing division, sowing hatred, when we should be working together. You know, we can fail or succeed together as a state. And Milwaukee has been by far the largest donor to shared revenue, you know, over the history of the program. Madison, too, is an economic engine of the state and is the, you know, only area of the state that is significantly growing way ahead of, you know, what you would expect. And so our whole state relies on the success of Madison and Milwaukee to be able to fund rural schools that just, you know, don't have the tax base, understandably, to fund themselves. And so the idea that somehow we should be pitted against each other as enemies, this urban versus rural thing, it is totally manufactured for political purposes. And it is totally antithetical, I think, to what it means to be from Wisconsin, which is that we love this state. And, you know, we all should take pride and ownership in the University of Wisconsin. We all should take pride and ownership in the beautiful lakes and natural places throughout our state. We have a lot to be proud of here. And if we work together, we can make it an even better state.
Let's turn for a moment to the state Democratic convention that you were at in Green Bay over this past weekend. And for folks that missed it last hour, let's play this one clip of Governor Evers showing that he still understands a thing or two about politics and the kinds of things you better make sure you say as you begin your second term. Here's what the governor had to say.
You know, some things have changed since our last convention. For one thing, people have started calling me two-term Tony. Now look, it's just family here this weekend, so I don't care what you call me. You call me governor, you can call me Tony, you can call me two-term Tony, or three-term Tony. I don't mind.
That was a pretty nice move just to avoid any lame duck talk already. I know 2026 is a ways off, but you know, people have asked the question, and there's the governor saying, you can find a million other things to talk about right now, but not that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think sometimes the obsession with horse race politics and the next election starting immediately after the last one does a real disservice to people, because there's the actual job of governing that really matters. And, you know, if there are substantive policy differences, or in this case, we have a record surplus and we have public agencies that have been underfunded for decades, it's important to talk about that and to address that before we just start obsessing over, you know, who might run against Tony in 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that because of the way that Republicans have handled the state budget to this point, taking all of the governor's proposals and putting them in the trash can and saying, well, we're going to work off a base instead. What they've created is a very natural compare and contrast that you're able to take right. The governor's proposals and say, look, here's what could have gotten done versus, you know, whatever they ultimately agreed to, compared to what could have been done if you'd have worked off the Evers plan to begin with.
Right. I mean, Governor Evers put forth a tremendous growth budget that was informed by people from all over the state, right? It had really transformative things in it, like expansion of healthcare access, like a universal paid family leave program. So whether you're a small business owner or you work for a big company, you can have access to paid family leave if you have a baby or get sick without losing your job. Stabilizing our childcare program, as well as a significant $2.3 billion boost for public education, which is closer to what we should be doing in times like this.
Turning away from the budget, of course, the legislature is still in session in other matters as well. And one of the more recent proposals from Republicans who are trying to provide the appearance of being moderate on their stance on the 1849 abortion ban is some language that could be construed as a fetal personhood bill. Can you talk more about what Republicans are trying to do rather than simply overturn the ban, and why the things that they're trying are still not good enough?
Yeah, so there's kind of a huge divide in the Republican Party right now. I mean, the vast majority of Republicans are very satisfied with the 1849 ban as is. They don't want to see any changes because criminalizing all abortion is what they've been working on for decades. But there's a small number of Republicans who say, hey, this makes us appear too extreme. We have to massage our position. We need to manipulate people to think that we're not quite as out of touch as we are, even though we all agree that abortion should be criminalized. So a couple of them are, you know, trying to basically say, do a 1984 memory hole situation and say, okay, well, if you need an abortion to save your life, it's not actually an abortion. Well, of course it is. You can call it whatever you want, but the bottom line is that is an abortion procedure, and we shouldn't be criminalizing doctors who are making these critical decisions with the patients that they're caring for. The other really dangerous thing is an attempt to enshrine fetal personhood into the law. And these come in all different varieties. It's giving legal rights to fetuses, allowing embryos or fetuses to sue their parents. You know, we've seen pregnant women punished for jaywalking and for smoking or for drinking, and even in some cases jailed under the guise of protecting their fetus and their fetus having legal standing. Now we have a bill by Republicans in the legislature to give a tax break to fetuses. Well, I'm sorry, but in a state that doesn't even have any paid family leave and that seems to be unwilling to invest in stabilizing childcare, a tax break for fetuses, all that's going to do is lay the groundwork for criminalizing birth control and IVF, infertility treatments. We need to be very, very careful of these Republicans.
It just always comes back to just tax breaks. I mean, it's the one, it's the one hammer, and everything looks like a nail by comparison. I got just a couple of seconds for this last question, but you're an attorney, so I don't think this will take long. On the Donald Trump indictments and your own feeling on the rule of law and whether a former president is above it the way he is trying to going to try to claim.
We should never have our elected leaders above the law. In fact, we should hold them to the highest standards of conduct.
Senator Kelda Roy is a member of the Joint Finance Committee and a state senator joining us this morning on Up North News Radio. Kelda, so great to see you at the convention, and thanks for popping on the radio with us this morning. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks, Pat.
All right. When we come back, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell is going to go over three things that you should know to start the week as we start to wrap up our conversation here. Don't forget, Christina Laurie joins me tomorrow with The Uplift, some of the happier stories that she likes to cover in the daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back. All right, after a little time away on our Monday morning visits, Terry Bell is back in the University Avenue studios as they continue work up on Capitol Square on the shiny new headquarters of Civic Media. So welcome back to commuting on University Avenue construction in Madison there, Terry. I bet that's a lot of fun.
You know, it's there's always some trade-off. This is a little closer to my home, so there's that. I've got that going for me. Shorter commute.
I just don't. There's so much to like about Madison, but the summer construction, wherever it is, whether it's on the, you know, the Beltline or, you know, University or wherever, when you're already on an isthmus to begin with, it definitely makes things a character builder to get around during the season of orange barrels.
Not designed for 21st century traffic, that's for sure.
No, really not. So Terry's here with three things to know to start the week. Where do you want to kick things off?
Well, let's start with the Democratic Convention up in Green Bay. Probably the biggest news that came out of that, among many things, is perhaps a slip of the tongue, perhaps a bit of a reveal. Governor Tony Evers joking with the crowd about being called three-term Tony. He got the nickname two-term Tony after winning the election in November. Then he dropped the three-term Tony during his remarks to the convention, and that got people to thinking already, as people in politics do, thinking about the next election, whether Governor Evers is up for a third term, whether he would run and whether he would do that.
Yeah, and it also enabled him to, again, point out that there's still much more work that he would like to do and conceivably could do so in a third term if there's a different makeup of the legislature, say, if there were new maps, you know, depending on what the newly progressive state Supreme Court were to do, you know, starting in August. So there's a lot that you could certainly read into those comments. You also had Tammy Baldwin making plenty of comments about her upcoming 2024 election. And even though on Friday, Congressman Mike Gallagher said he would not be challenging Senator Baldwin, you could tell Senator Baldwin was still taking nothing for granted in terms of seeking a third term.
No. The Republicans still see Wisconsin as vulnerable, given how close Wisconsin elections are. What a purple state this is. They figure with the right circumstances in place next year that this could be a blue seat that they flip. So I don't think Gallagher's exit changes their mind much about that, but it does take a viable candidate out of the mix.
Yes, it does. All right. So convention look aheads, number one. What's number two on the Monday list from Terry Bell?
Well, the big story. Well, let's get to the big story. Let's save the big story for last. But this week is going to be a big week for the shaping of the future of the state of Wisconsin in many ways. There was a big deal struck between the governor, the Democratic governor, and the Republicans who are in charge of the legislature about the shared revenue overhaul, this change to a system of sharing state funds with local governments that has been begged for years by local governments, finally happening. There were some sticking points that both sides ironed out over the course of that week. And on Thursday, there was a big announcement about what that would be. Now, what we have so far is just an announcement. There is no, the actual physical bill, I guess, is still a work in progress. But everybody, this is kind of an old-fashioned deal. After years of gridlock, actually the two sides came to a compromise in which every party got some of what they wanted and some of what they did not want. But I think all sides can claim a victory when they, kind of approach it from whatever angle they choose to. But what you have is $1 billion for public education. What the governor may not like is the more money for voucher schools. Now, that's not an expansion of the voucher system. It is just simply spending more money per pupil. So there was a bit of a trade-off there. Milwaukee gets the possibility of raising their local sales taxes. Now the work begins trying to convince the county board and the city council to raise those sales taxes. And I understand right now there's a lot of reluctance. That would be a tough sell, even though the local leaders, the executives of the city and the county say, we need this extra money desperately. But what this deal does is really save Milwaukee from going over the fiscal cliff, which in many ways helps Wisconsin from a really bad situation.
Yeah, the last thing you want to, you don't want to start rumors of, you know, bailout discussions and things like that. All right, takes us to third on the list of three things to know to start this week.
Well, the things you need to know tomorrow is that President Trump, a former president of the United States, will make an appearance in a Florida courtroom, Miami, about the indictment that was handed down on Thursday. About the allegations of classified documents that he was stashing in his mansion in Florida. And we all saw the damning photos, and a lot of people pored over the actual indictment itself. And things do not look good for the former president right now, but he's going to make the case that he is the target of unfair treatment. And what he has going for him is a judge, one of his own appointees in Aileen Cannon, who will be presiding over this case. She is an unabashed Trump supporter and has ruled in his favor in several related cases.
Yes, I've noted as well on my political Facebook page, Pat Kreitlow up north. There's a photo of her in Trump face paint and a Trump cowboy hat at a rally, who now is a federal judge who's going to be on this case. Terry, folks can follow all the stories that you're covering. There are specifically three very important times a day where the work you and your team are doing can be shown off. And one of them seems to be coming up in maybe 3 minutes or so.
We're pretty excited about it. Extended newscasts at 8, noon, and 5. And we are blanketing the states and your local communities with the information that we think you need to know to live a more productive and happy life.
So that noon one, that's an especially special hour that's going on.
Oh gosh, days. Yeah, 13 minutes from beginning to end of the news content. We start out with national news. We get to the statewide stories after that, and then we break away for a couple of minutes of what's happening literally in your own backyard. And after that, we cut to a minute of statewide weather. The weather has been certainly a big part of the news lately with the drought happening, all the effects of that. And then 3 minutes of sports. I'm especially tickled to have Mike Clemens join the Civic Media team. He is one of the deans of the Wisconsin Sports Press Corps, and he's one of ours now, and we get to hear Mike's work and his insights and his information three times a day on your local Civic Media station.
That is awesome. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell, thanks so much. Good to see you on Mondays again.
Have Thank a good start Pat. To the good week. Good to be back.
All right. All right. Now, coming up at after the 8 o'clock news, again, depending on your Civic Media radio station, there will be all kinds of options for you here. It could be Earl Ingram. It could be Chad Holmes. It could be WFHR Mornings in Wisconsin Rapids. It could be Stu Daniels on the western part of the state. It could be Stephanie Miller in Madison. And if you're missing any of those shows, if they're not on your local station, go to civicmedia.us and you can listen in that way as a podcast. Tomorrow on this fine program, we have Hans Breitenmoser and all the latest headlines. So thanks again for sticking with us as we get the week started, and have a wonderful Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.